Jesus, okay, this has got a lot of big words in it. Okay, I'll stop talking. We can get to the actual recording, my bad.
All right.
Welcome to Extroverted. Join your loud friends, Jules and Jeremy, for a weekly competition beyond the headlines and into the extra.
Hi, thanks for checking us out. I'm your host, Jules, and we are here for the last week of spooky season, which I've thoroughly enjoyed, and I'm so excited to bring back one of my favorite co-hosts so far, Mr. Christy Yamaguchi Main.
You know, just waiting in the wings to be asked back on the show.
I have to tell you that, one, you know, with Jeremy's on nights at work, and so he's been kind of MIA, jumping in and out, and he is so envious that yet again, I get the pleasure of hanging out with you on the mic. He really, really wanted to try to take this episode, but, you know, it didn't work for him.
Well, tough shit, Jeremy.
Yeah, wake up,
buddy. Yeah, dude. Sleep is nice, but it's not as nice as hanging out with me via cell phone across the internet and shit. Probably that's a lie. Sleep is so much better than doing this.
So, more important than anything else, I have to know, like, where do you stand on spooky season? Like, are you a believer? Are you a skeptic? Do you?
I'm a believer that the season is spooky. I don't know, like, as far as a belief, like, you mean a fan of it, or like, what is spooky season, like, what is that?
That's
belief,
good questions.
Exactly?
Are you a fan? Like, do you key up for like Ira's spooky movie recommendations? Do you change your inputs to things that are a little more ghosts and goblins and ghouls and monster flicks and pumpkin spice?
Not really. No. I like it. I've always enjoyed Halloween, but like, we always carve pumpkins. So we do the traditional stuff, but like, I'm not, you know, I've never been like a huge horror movie fan or monster movie fan or anything like that. Just never really.
Not your shtick.
Got my attention. Yeah, exactly. Not my thing, but I've got love for it. You know, I appreciate it. I like that. I love the changing of the weather, of course. I am a fan of pumpkin spice flavored shit. You know, I like it. I think I'm pretty average. I'm not a zealot about
it. That's totally fair.
Yeah.
Well, then
yeah.
I think it works out really great that we've chosen to talk together about one of my favorite internet wormholes, which is urban legends. I love urban legends because you can choose to go down the rabbit hole of, yes, that really was an apparition in the wall, or also there was, you know, I'm sure you heard the episode where we were talking about the Mako light. And so I read somewhere that it had something to do with, I'm going to say Titanic plates, and that's not right. Like the earth plate shifting, causing the railroad tracks to create friction, creating a light. And that's what people were seeing.
Right.
And so when the tracks were removed, there have been less sightings. So.
Okay.
So there can be some explanations for some of these urban legends. So it's kind of fun for both those of us who like to follow a spooky trail and those of us who like are going to deep dive for the facts.
Sure, sure. One of my favorite podcasts, I think it's called like Science Solves It. And it basically, each episode is about some mysterious kind of urban legend based thing. And they try to get to the bottom of it through a scientific explanation. That's one of my favorite things about urban legends is that, that aspect of there is a kernel of truth somewhere in here. Now, like you can, you know, the paths diverge and you can go down the, like, there is a rational 100% explanation of this, or you can just let yourself get lost in the weirdness of it and just, you know, kind of let that chill run up your spine
a little bit. Yeah, absolutely. I also, as extroverts, like we seek out, like just as a collective, we can learn so much together. So,
oh yeah, for sure.
So my favorite urban legend that I've been kind of deep diving on is it plays into some natural human paranoia. Like I don't like creepy crawly things. Mm-hmm. I'm just a jumpy human, and
understandable.
You know, I'm sure you've heard where people say that if you live in an area like we do, where there are alligators, that people bring home baby alligators as pets, and they flush them down the toilet when they get too big, and they right. eat your food waste, and in the sewers are super crocs, right? Okay,
right, well, yeah. I think this was a big thing in New York.
That was a theory in New York City. Right. It's obviously very popular in Florida. So I kind of started playing into the, you know, you can flush all of your dead goldfish down and they go to a supercell of free mm-hmm. wildlife in the but it appears that lots of things come up your toilets. This is like an actual Ooh. Real problem for some
Oh yeah, yeah, I know.
Some regions. I've
oh yes, yes it is. I'm keen to this. I know the path you're going on. Go ahead.
In Australia, there have been several real stories of 7 foot long pythons found in two
Jesus
separate
God.
Toilets in 2013. If you can even imagine, a man's penis. I'm so sorry. Trigger warning for my male listeners. A man's penis was bitten not by a python, but by another snake found in his...
Whoa, 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 whoa. Bitten off? Did you say bitten off? It was the penis was
it
bitten
was
off?
Bitten off.
What the this... fart? Okay.
The snake wasn't venomous, but he was still obviously damaged.
What the hell?
In 1999 in Richmond, Virginia... in Petersburg, I'm sorry, the Richmond Times reported, but in Petersburg, a woman was sitting on her toilet.
Oh, Petersburg? Okay, all right. I was going to say, if this also includes a penis getting bitten off in Petersburg.
Come on, I'm not that obvious.
A little, little too on the nose, Julie. Little too nope, on the this... nose. Or on the penis, rather.
The tip, regardless. a woman sat down on her toilet when a rat jumped out of the commode and bit her. She described the rat as being 7 or 8 inches long. And that is actually Jeez. Incredibly common, like so common that yeah. In Seattle, their utility company just issues a thing that says, look, if you happen to see a rat has come up through the pipes, it's the same as if, you know, you had a hamster cage, just put the lid down and flush the toilet a few times. Like they're just like, don't worry about it. Flush the toilet.
That's so wild. Like it makes me want like.
You want a rat in your toilet? Because I have a YouTube video. I'm telling you,
Jesus
you do
God.
Not.
Oh, no. I've seen videos of this because there a lot of people don't understand that like your pipes are filled with a lot of air. Like
yes.
like rats get in them and they have these giant air pockets and they can hold their breath for a long time. They're great swimmers in water. Like it's just a perfect rat scenario for them to exist in.
It's true.
And yeah,
rats can't climb up really really steep pipes or vertical pipes for more than a few feet mm-hmm. Few feet, but apparently with plumbing for your toilet, like that's not an issue.
Not an issue
and then obviously
all.
Yeah, they've got a lot of matter, let's say,
right
in right, in yeah. there, which is a perfect feeder cell for their nasty lives. In Singapore, a former athlete was bitten by a snake in the toilet. It got his testicles. I'm so sorry.
He got his testicles what? That's a cliffhanger, Julie. Got his testicles what, Julie?
It just says he was bitten on the testicles by an 8-foot python while sitting down to relieve himself.
Fucking hell, dude.
The bite, again, was not poisonous, but the 43-year-old man was taken to the hospital and received several stitches.
So I have been bitten by a python before.
What?
But a very small python. Well, I mean, like a ball python. People keep those as pets, right? My middle son, Kylan, has one. He's got, his is about, I'd say about 4 feet long. And I used to have one. I had a Nicaraguan boa, and when you're feeding him, sometimes, you know, like I was very young at the time when I had him, and I didn't have an extra cage to strictly feed him in, so he got my hand one time. And it's very delicate though, because python,
yeah, it sounds super delicate.
They have all these tiny little teeth that are pointed inwards, so that once they latch onto their prey, basically it's like a directional Velcro.
Yes.
Like it pulls the prey in one direction. They don't have those fangs that you think of when you think of like a snake bite. So the undoing that, like undoing the snake's mouth off of the testicles, sounds absolutely horrifying. And an 8 foot python?
8 foot python. I mean, obviously the whole thing wasn't presenting, because I don't know how large your toilet is, but that feels impossible. But there's not a visual for that. I think he was busy.
Oh my God. Those dudes, like those snakes can like, I don't know if they can dislocate their ribs or what exactly. They can get through such small openings. And I know this for a fact because I got actually my son's snake disappeared in my truck. Do you know that story?
I feel like I remember, like, you thought he was in the actual chair, like the back.
Yeah. So I was wearing him around my neck. It was a crazy story. Weird circumstance. It was storming. We were trying to get home before we were leaving Carolina Beach. We were leaving the island and before it flooded out the north end. You know how bad those roads get down
right,
there?
Right, yes.
And so I was like, you know, wipers going. It is just, you can barely see in front of you. And all of a sudden I feel the snake slip off of my, from around my neck. And I look over and he is disappearing down the opening where the seatbelt goes into the car.
Whoa,
you know, like, yeah, you know what I'm talking about. And I drive a little Ford Ranger. So it was just enough of an opening for him to disappear down in there. And the next day I had to, like, I got to work early and asked that. I was like, fellas, got a weird circumstance going on. I need your help. And they helped me take apart the inside of my truck. And I had to use a heat gun to motivate him to come back out. We finally found him. There was this like little area in between the roof and the ceiling of the interior of the truck, and he was just like laying long ways.
So you had to dismantle the car to find him.
It was ridiculous. I've got video of it. I'll send it to you.
The Seattle rat, toilet rats, is how they call them. The toilet rats are, they have 50 to 80 calls for assistance a year.
Wow.
Jeremy's family lived in Washington before they went abroad, so maybe he will have a firsthand account for us of some toilet rats when he returns. So that's the urban legend that made me close all of the toilets in my house and cringe indefinitely. And I'm hoping that to never experience this ever, but I'm no longer confident or safe.
Yeah. I think a lot of those stories are centralized in large cities just because of the age of their systems.
Right. There's a lot more interconnectivity with
exactly all of the possible entrance points. I am on a well house. That's where we get our water, and we have a septic tank and stuff. So I don't know I don't know if there's ample opportunity for that to happen at my house, but it's probably slim to none.
Yeah, but if you flushed an alligator into your sewer pipe, like he would have a habitat in your system. Yeah.
I don't know if that's how habitats work, Julie. You're right. It would technically be a habitat as long as the alligator lived, which I don't think would be very long. It does not mean I'm not going to imagine having my wiener bit off by a python every time I sit down on the toilet now. It doesn't matter. That's what urban legends are good for, right? Like, it doesn't matter how likely the scenario is to happen or how, you know, ridiculous sounding it is.
Yeah. I 100% check my back seat before I get into my car every single time.
And you know good and damn well, there's nothing in your back seat. It's just a peace of mind. It's something that's been implanted in your brain that you have to do. It's like, it's that type of thing is similar to, you know, saying a prayer before you play a football game, or, you know, there's like these little ritualistic things yes. that we do to calm our nerves. And some of it is in the form of checking your back seat, or, you know, making sure there's not a rat waiting to bite your testicles off. And some of it is like, you know, saying a prayer before a meal, or, you know, like
right.
there's like, there's all sorts of, it's all kind of flows from the same vein.
That's interesting. So what urban legend has been piquing your fancy?
Oh, piquing my fancy. I like that phrase. Okay. Let's see. So have you ever heard, I know you're not from North Carolina technically, right?
It's true. I've been here long enough. I have an accent.
Absolutely. You're a native as far as I'm concerned. But I grew up hearing about a kind of mystery phenomena that my dad would tell me about because he's seen it before. Ooh. And I kind of, growing up, I like kind of didn't. I don't, you know, this was when he was telling me, this was obviously long before the internet. And like, I even thought to check about it, but the fact that he told me that he had witnessed this, and it always like stuck with me, it lodged in my head. And I was always fascinated by it. Have you ever heard of the mysterious Brown Mountain Lights?
No.
Okay. So Brown Mountain is near the Linville Gorge in okay. North Carolina. And basically, I'll read this introduction from this article that I've got here. These mysterious lights have been appearing at Brown Mountain in the Linville Gorge area of North Carolina for hundreds of years. According to Cherokee legend, around 1200 AD, a great battle was fought between the Cherokee and Catawba Indians at Brown Mountain, and the mysterious lights are from the Indian maidens still searching for their men who died in battle. So, I love this type of folklore, this type of urban legend, this type of spooky shit, because like you were talking about with the Mako lights, there is obviously, you know, I lean towards a rational explanation sure. of this, but so easily, if you are witnessing it firsthand, all of that rationale goes out the 100%. Immediately goes out the window. Like,
I don't believe in ghosts, but when something isn't where it was supposed to be, I'm uncomfortable. I'm like, right, well, maybe I exactly. do believe.
Exactly. Exactly. So many people have tried to explain the origin of the lights over the years. In 1771, a German scientist explained the lights as inflamed nitrous vapors, but that was instantly disputed. A 1913 U.S. Geological Survey concluded that they were headlights from a locomotive. But when the tracks washed away 3 years later, people continued to see the lights. That theory was also thrown out. During the early 1900s, the mysterious lights were thought to be aliens, and Brown Mountain was even featured in an American pulp magazine, The Argosy, telling people to go see the UFOs at wow. Brown Mountain. Yeah, so they've been, the other interesting thing is the lights have been reported as being white, red, yellow, orange, and blue. So there's not even consistency with these lights, and these colors have come throughout the entire year. So like red lights, you would think, okay, that's clearly like some kind of traffic, you know, that's the tail lights sure. of a car somewhere. That's creating that, but this was
the car
long before the state. Yes, exactly. They've been described looking like large balls of fire to small candle lights, and from floating near the ground to rising up high into the sky. Bluegrass musician. So the other thing is like, as you like 1770, what was that first in 1771? So this is before, you know, the Declaration right. of Independence. People have been seeing lights in this area. So they're integral to the like folklore and to the kind of the urban legend myths of the mountains in North Carolina. There's a song called Legend of the Brown Mountain Lights, and National Geographic has called Brown Mountain one of the three best places to experience a natural Ooh. Wonder. Yeah. So there's, you know, these are kind of like world renowned, this phenomenon. And people have, growing up, my dad would tell me that folks have been sent to the areas where the lights were being seen, and, you know, with radios, and radioed back to people that were observing, looking for the lights, and the people observing could see the lights, and the people like were, you know, in the area that they should be able to see them right there, and they weren't visible. So there's still not any clear explanation for what the hell is going on.
That's
there.
That's crazy. I wonder if it's something kind of like the Northern Lights.
Like like the Aurora Borealis type of phenomena. See, I think that occurs high up in the atmosphere enough that where, like, I don't, maybe it is some kind of weird emission of like plasma from the ground or something that is like charged with static electricity.
The colors, that grows. That's what has me so.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point. That's a very good point. Yeah. So one local story recounts that in 1982, Morganton resident Tommy Hunter said he actually touched the lights at the Highway 181 overlook. He had looked over the edge and saw a ball of light that was hovering, and he touched it. Tommy said it felt like he had stuck his finger in a light socket. Six other people were with Tommy that night and all corroborated his story. So, are the lights real? Joshua Warren and Professor Caton, Caton? Caton, say that's not even the question anymore. The question now is, what are they? For now, at least, they are simply one of North Carolina's greatest mysteries.
That's incredible.
So, yeah, you can still, if you go, if anybody listening to this is ever, you know, along the Appalachian the Blue Ridge Parkway, rather, you can go plan your visit. The town of Morganton is a starting point to view the lights. There's brownmountainlights.com for travel information, and you can go and witness this phenomenon. And it says where to see the best viewing location is probably Brown Mountain Overlook on Highway 181 between mile marker 20 and 21.
Oh my God, I wish I had had you on the podcast sooner. I could do like apple picking vacation and then spooky shit for me.
Oh,
like,
right.
Damn it. Right. I was just in the mountains. This is ridiculous.
Oh, were you really?
Yeah, we just went up to Concord. We were so close to all of this.
Oh, man. Where were you a week ago? I'm sorry. That is funny. We were supposed to record like last week, and I completely shit the bed on that. So I apologize.
This could be a firsthand telling of my brush with fate.
That's what I absolutely love about this story, and just... Again, like this scratches my itch of you can go and witness these things today, and there still is not an explanation for them. They've been being seen, like you're going to witness the same phenomena that this German scientist did in 1771.
Oh, God, this is cool. Right?
Like the spookiness of that, the eeriness, the kind of like transportation through time of witnessing something that. People, you know, we think of ourselves as more educated and more scientifically literate. Why? Because we are, right? But this dude in 1771 was trying to explain this phenomenon and couldn't. And guess what? We still can't today. Like professors of all sorts of like science and you know, the head of academia, they're still trying to figure out what the hell they are. And yes, there is probably... There is a rational explanation for this, unless you truly believe in like in Native American spirits looking for their long lost warriors and whatnot. But I don't know, man. It's so cool to me. This is the type of more so than you know this terrible tragic murder happened. In this home or, you know, that type of urban legend doesn't really do it for me because that requires me to believe that other people have seen ghosts. But for something like this, I can literally pull over on the side of the highway and witness this thing.
Right. That's so good.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you like it.
I love it. Thank you so much. I've never heard this before. And we even have like a book of North Carolina lore. That my husband had from his childhood. And so after I had told the story of the Beast of Bladenboro and the Mako lights, my mother-in-law has seen the Mako lights. She says it's not an interesting enough story to tell. Agree to disagree. And and my husband was furious that I blew the load early on the Beast of Bladenboro because it's a great urban legend.
Yeah,
but,
for sure.
But unlike this, there hasn't been a reoccurrence of the vampire beast.
Right.
In fairness,
right.
They seem to be making sacrifices to it or whatever, but but yeah, this is not in that book. So
that's wild. That's, I mean, like you can tell, like I'm reading this article that I've got is from 2012. But it just did a good you know, rehashing right. of basically what still stands to this day, which is we don't know what the hell is going on here, but you can witness this, you can see this firsthand for yourself. So I like I said, I love anything that you can still you know, you can witness firsthand and walk away perplexed from, you know.
Oh, I'm so excited. I want to go back to the mountains right now.
me too. I'm right there,
Chrissy,
with you.
I'm so, thank you so much for coming back on the podcast. Thank you for bringing such a rad story for the lat. This is, I'm glad also, honestly, because it's the last week of spooky season, and I think you just topped right. it off beautifully. So God, I'm so thankful well, cool. for you. I'm gonna let you go because I've got to bring on my brother Ira for our last spooky season movie rec.
Excellent.
So thank you. Hopefully we'll talk to you again very soon. And
sounds good.
Extroverts, hold on just a second. I'll be right back. Hey, extroverts. Thanks for waiting for us. Ira's back tonight to share another movie review. Ira, how are you?
Doing great. Before I start my review, let me just say, last week I didn't have my notes. I recorded without my notes and confused Clive Barker with John Carpenter. John Carpenter did The Thing. Clive Barker, who did The Book of Blood, was a playwright director. He's known for Hellraiser,
yep,
Candyman, Lord of Illusion, Midnight Meat Train. He's got the more kind of off horror.
Yeah, I'm glad. Thank you for saying that. My pod husband obviously was furious that I do love scary movies, but I didn't catch it because I wasn't thinking real clear. John Carpenter also did Halloween, so I have a lot of shame in just not catching it.
Right. Yeah. I was the one that made the mistake. I should have known better. And like I said, I was kind of without notes in a strange area. I was like, oh, let me just think real fast. And I messed it up. So I apologize to your listeners on my mishap.
Oh, you're fine. Listen, if anything, I mean, and if anybody's been listening to Extroverted, they know Jeremy says it all the time. We're kind of half-ass on our research, so we take it about as far as we can, and we draw the line. And to that, I must confess, I started Books of Blood, but I didn't finish it. It's a little trippy for me. There's some... I don't know. I can't really tell what's going on. And it seems a little interconnected, but it's like piecemealed. It's a confusing thing for me to follow, but I dig it.
Right. Yeah. Like I said, it's one of those trilogies where it's just a bunch of stories mixed together in typical horror movie fashion. I mean, we get used to that. I've seen Tales from the Dark Side had a movie, had three or four stories. Tales from the Hood, three or four stories all interlocking. So yeah, I mean, I dig it. It's brand new. I really liked it a lot. I hope everybody else liked it too.
Yeah, I got some good feedback from it. Some people really said that after I finish it, I need to do a Reddit deep dive. So apparently there's a lot out there for people that are really into it. So I can't wait to finish it, and I will come back to you with that. But in the meantime, what did you come up with for our last week of spooky season?
I watched The Witches this week on HBO Max.
Oh, yes.
Roald Dahl movie story.
Yep.
Remade from the 1990 version with Angelica Houston with Anne Hathaway. I dug it and I liked it. It's kiddish, but it made me really start thinking about witches again.
Yeah.
So this week I chose The Lords of Salem. It's a 2012 Rob Zombie movie.
Oh,
if you've seen Rob Zombie, you know his love for gore. You know his love for 70s extreme movies.
Right.
Of course, the main character is his wife, Sherry Moon. It also has a bunch of other Rob Zombies normals like Jeff Daniel Phillips, Meg Foster, D. Wallace, and the late great Sid Haig,
Oh,
Captain
Sid
Spaulding.
Haig.
Yeah.
I This movie is right up my alley in a very gross way. And you know, as my brother,
Yeah.
but in a very gross way, I love Rob Zombie movies. Like, that is a perfect, but I mean, you led into it appropriately, right? When you say Rob Zombie, you know what you're getting. There's no
That's
shock and
right.
awe here. Like, you're just going down the road. But I haven't actually seen this one.
And it kind of fell between the cracks of the Halloweens and the House of Thousand Corpses and the Devil Rejects. It fell in between the cracks, and he's got a couple that's fell in between the cracks. He's got another one called 31 that was a Kickstart movie, fan funded,
Yeah.
turned out real great. But this week we're going to talk about Lords of Salem, and it has the greatest instrumental song
Oh,
done by
Lord.
John Five and Griffin Boyce. The movie basically is DJs in the 70s and they get a strange record and it's done by the Lords. And when they play it, it's music created by a coven of witches who were tried during the witch trials.
Oh,
And
it's
it
awesome.
basically
Where were you
messes with
2 weeks ago?
them. Yeah.
I love it.
It's on Amazon. You can watch it there. It's definitely a Rob Zombie movie.
Yeah.
It's got a bunch of eerie undertones, Salem witch trials, 70s feel. I like it a lot.
But no Captain Spaulding gonna sneak in on me. I need
No,
a
no,
clown.
no.
I need a clown trigger warning on your movies. I should have prefaced that a long time ago.
Well, stay away from that Rob Zombie 31 because there's lots of clowns in that.
Ugh, I can do it. I just have to, I don't know,
Prepare
prepare.
yourself.
Yeah, I gotta really know. I gotta have like a lighthearted something to follow it up because it fucks with my sleep, I'll be honest.
I would like to know somewhere in the future there'll be like a family of clowns that move in down the street from you and you're watching them get out of their car and like when the 12th one gets out of the Volkswagen Bug,
Have
you
you
go in
ever
a panic
seen
state.
the memes or whatever online where it's like somebody saw a spider and it's that little girl and she straight burned the house down?
Yes.
That would be me with my clown neighbor. I'd be like, that's a damn shame. We out.
Here's the thing. You're scared of clowns, but you're totally down to watch them. I know you watch the It's.
I do.
You just tough through it. You're a tough cookie.
I think I hate myself in some sense. I'll talk to my therapist about it. I don't know, but yeah, I mean, so much so that like I'm struggling to watch Dr. Sleep because Rosie the Hat is kind of just a little too circus for me. Like she really gets me the willies, and I've read the book.
I think Rosie the Hat isn't so much circus as she is gypsy-like.
Yeah.
That might help. That might help you push through it.
Thank
But
you.
scratch those Lords of Salem.
Lords of Salem. Listen, I've said it every week, but this time I genuinely mean it. You have definitely hit on the head for me, in the Rob Zombie zone. So I'm going all in. Lords of Salem for this week's pick with Extroverted. Ira, I want to thank you so much for joining me this month. This has been a blast.
It's been great. I've had lots and lots of fun. Like I said, I muffled without my notes the 1 week, but I hope I gave your listeners some great movies to listen to and watch. And there's lots of horror movies. Don't get out there and be like, oh, I don't like this. There's tons of horror movies. There's tons of movies that bring up strong conversations with people.
Right. Listen, I love a good
The
movie in all aspects, but I actually was having a discussion with a friend about kind of like a all-time best horror movie category. So I was wondering if you might be interested in coming back this week for a bonus episode, and I don't want to call it a challenge, but I actually have another movie extrovert that I'd like to introduce you to, and then maybe the two of you could tag team some spooky suggestions going into our holiday weekend. What do you think?
Yeah, that sounds perfect. That sounds perfect, and I'm definitely down for it. I'll start making my list now.
That is awesome. Okay, so extroverts, keep an eye out. One, for The Lords of Salem on Amazon. I'm sure you can find it somewhere else, wherever you're willing to pay. And for a bonus episode coming out from Extroverted this Friday, the 30th, going into spooky season. Ira, thank you again. Extroverts,
no problem.
I'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye.